Good evening and welcome. This is the November 11, 2013, Glen Ellyn School Board District 41 regular board meeting. We call the meeting to order. Mr. Kenwood, would you please lead us in reciting the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Kenwood?
Here.
Mr. Elder?
Here.
Mr. Wachemski?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Black?
Here. Public participation. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. Personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and or other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate D41 staff representative for a response, if a response is warranted. Is there anyone present this evening that would like to address the board at this time? There's only one that's filled out. Anyone else who would wish to address the board, please fill out a green sheet and give it to Mrs. Stecker. Mr. Cooper, are you ready?
All set.
You may proceed.
Jeff Cooper, Glen Ellyn. I wonder what we're teaching our kids about how we honor our veterans when we're closed on institute days, sick days, the day before Thanksgiving, but business as usual on Veterans Day. Speaking of honor, apparently we are honoring the board by calling Friday School Board Member Day. The following Friday, the 22nd, is when they honor us by repeating last year's mistake of spending public dollars on hotels and dinner at the IASB conference in Chicago. Last year was $9,648, including $5,000 on hotels and food. I was told that this year hotel accommodations and dinner are included as they have been budgeted for. Before we honor you, let me remind all of you that your budget for the hotel and dinner is my money, my neighbor's money, and so on. Because you think you budgeted money for this doesn't mean that it should be spent. Money on dinners and hotels have nothing to do with the education of kids in District 41. And that is what the budget should be spent on. Education, period. Some other districts get Wooddale, Roselle, Palatine, Park Ridge, Mundelein, Mount Prospect, Lyle, Glenbrook, Geneva, Cary. Why don't we? As I looked through a district email from September 25th, I was reminded by Ms. Worthen that board members are unpaid volunteers. I guess that is great reason for a $105 a person dinner. I guess Friday's honor doesn't quite cut it, does it? Thank you.
Mrs. Stecker, anyone else? Mr. Rathi, ready?
Yes.
Please proceed.
I'm not a lawyer, so I have no last-minute revelations about portables that I could bring up, like in closing arguments on TV. I think you all know where I stand on the facilities issue, so I'll just sum it up here. I think you're making a big mistake by not building out enough in phase one, especially...
Sorry, by what? Not...
Building out.
Okay. And not building out enough, I think you said, right?
Yes.
Sorry, I just didn't hear you.
I think you're making a big mistake by not building out enough in phase one, especially at Lincoln, and relying on a future referendum to right-size the schools could backfire and handcuff future boards' decision-making. Unfortunately, the Lincoln representation on this board failed to rally around our school to eliminate all the elementary portables in this plan. You've all made your bed and had the required discussion on this subject. As you vote on this later, think about all the money the district will continue to spend on the maintenance required for a portable classroom, and perhaps the pest issues that we've had this year alone.
Thank you. Anyone else, Mrs. Stecker? No? Okay, moving on. Recognition, it's a school board member day, November 15, 2013.
And that's from me. Friday, November 15th, as was noted earlier, has been designated as school board members day in Illinois. And the Glen Allen School District is joining other districts across the state to thank our community volunteers for their commitment and contributions to our schools. School board members serve their communities without monetary compensation to make public education the best it can be for every child. Your policies and oversight guide the district as tough decisions are made on complex educational and social issues that affect the entire community in the lives of individual students. I want to personally thank each District 41 board for your service. It is a privilege to work for you. Thank you for giving your time, your thought, your energy to the community. It means a lot. So thank you. Thank you for me, myself, and my team.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We have some lovely little parting gifts for you. Who will send these?
That's the extent of your speech?
That was it.
That's supposed to carry me the whole year?
That was it. That's going to carry you, buddy.
These will carry you the whole year.
Yeah, look through and see which ones.
There you go. Make sure you have your own.
Make sure you have your own. If you need a reminder, come back. I'll give you another pat on the back.
Thank you, Paul.
Maybe the audience would like to see it.
See? We share in transparency. No expenses.
Okay, moving on. Presentations, reports, and initiatives. The 2013 proposed property tax levy.
Thank you.
Mr. Cicerella.
So this evening we'll be having our first presentation for the year for the 2013. Scoot forward so I can see what's in front of me. Tonight is our initial conversation around the levy. We just discussed it a few moments ago at the Finance Committee. We'll be discussing it, or I'll be presenting this evening. We'll be having questions and discussion at the November 25th meeting, and then we'll be moving for adoption by the Board of Education at the December 9th meeting. So, there are frequently questions about the relationship between EAB, tax rate, CPI, new construction, and so forth. So this is a table that I began to include last year in the presentation. And, you know, we typically hear a lot of questions. Well, my EAB is going down. Why isn't my tax bill going down? Well, property tax law was created a number of years ago, back in the early 90s, where basically if you look in that right-hand bucket over there, when existing EAB goes up, it forces your tax rate down. That's why the property tax cap was created. Unfortunately, over the past 4 or 5 years, we've seen some rather severe economic times in our country, and we've seen the opposite reaction, and that is with decreasing EAB, it's actually forcing the tax rate up. So something obviously unanticipated, but that's a consequence. When tax values are going down, it's forcing your rate up. More on the far left-hand column, if you have existing AV remains relatively flat or even over the years, your tax rate will remain essentially flat. So, again, I thought I would just put that table in to give you just a very brief understanding of the relationship between EAV and tax rates. This evening, we are bringing forth a recommendation that includes a CPI that was established last December at 1.7%. The levy request that you're going to see in this presentation is a request for an extension 4.57% greater than last year. And based upon CPI, estimated EAV and new construction, we actually expect this increase to come in something below 3%, around 2.43%. CPI history since 1991, the overall average over that period of time is about 2.5%. You can see it's pretty volatile and it fluctuates from year to year. We can go back when the economy really began to tank. We were in 2007, we had a 4.1% increase. And then in 2008, it really dove down to 0.1%, 2.7%, 1.5%. 3% and then 1.7% for this year. And I'll let you know now that CPI is trending at 1.9%, 2% that will be established in December of this year for next year's budget. So what I've tried to do is every year I try to get a little bit closer in terms of what the levy request is, which is expressed by the darker green bar, and what the actual extension is, as well as my anticipated extension. Back in 2003, the district asked for a 29% increase. They came back with a 9% increase. This year, we're looking for 4.57, and we're expecting 2.43. And that difference for this year is about 2.14%. As you can see, over the past several years, we've tried to get closer and closer between our request and what our extension is expected to be.
Bob, can I ask a question about
sure.
that?
Sure.
I don't know if you'll remember this.
I do.
You do?
It's not expressed as a percentage. It's a difference between the... So
no,
when I say...
You go back to the next slide?
Sure.
That when we asked for the 20%, what was the actual levy? Do you remember? Or the 18%?
Yeah. You can go on to the next slide.
One slide before, right?
Yeah, slide before.
It was actually 9% and 11%, right?
Yes.
Right, thanks.
29 and 11%. Correct.
Well, while we're here, Bob, just because folks are looking at this, the -4.52 was when we abated.
That's correct.
And then the 2012 looked enormous, or much higher, because of the boomerang effect from the abatement.
That's correct. Both the request as well as the extension was significantly greater than the previous year. So new construction, you know, back in 2002, we were averaging in excess of $31 million, 2003, $31 million. We were cruising along pretty nicely to 2006. We did 21, but then it shot back up in 2007. 2008, again, almost up to $29 million. And then the economy, we see the effects of the economy where we were at new construction estimates of actual new construction of 9.9, 13.3. Last year, I was surprised. It came in at 6.3. I spoke to the local assessors. They told me to estimate a decreased EAV of 6%, so 94% of last year's extension, and then $10 million of new construction for this year. I'll be putting a call into each assessor in the next week or so to try to get an update, because those projections are probably a month old by now. But when we come back with the next presentation, if there's any significant difference, I would make that adjustment in my presentation.
And what does the district or taxing body get with new construction? How does that translate?
This year, it's about based upon 1.7% CPI. Mm-hmm. I think it's around $689,000. Yeah. So the difference between $1 million and the $689,000 is the value of the new construction. That's what that contributes to the taxes. Yeah. So here's the extension over the past, since 2003, over the past 10 years. We were in 2003 at about 28.9 million. This year our estimated extension is about 44.2 million. And again, you see a pretty significant increase. That was basically for two reasons. New construction was so high, and CPIs were rather high at that time, and a rapidly increasing value for EAV, equalized assessed valuation. So I had a request earlier today. A board member asked me, just tell me what is the total levy divided by the student enrollment. And so those are the numbers that we're presenting this evening. Again, for 2013, these numbers were taken from the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, and the number for 2013, it's just an estimate of where we'll be at this year. I don't think it will come in at $12,390, something
less.
You think
it'll be lower?
Yes, I do believe that. Here is a history of our tax rate. The lower bar there indicates the bond and interest, which is a given number to us. The assessor sets it. If we make a conscious decision to abate through the bond and interest fund, that decision can be made. But the bond and interest fund is given to the district. We then have the light green bar, which indicates the operating rate, which is everything other than the bond and interest rate. And then we have the total tax rate indicated at the top of the blue bar. And I would just like to refer you back to the initial slide where you have increasing EAV, you have a decreasing tax rate, vice versa. When you have a decreasing EAV, it forces your tax rate up. That That chart there exemplifies that theory. So these are the numbers for our levy request from our ed fund down to our bond and interest fund. The total levy request of $45,157,000 is 4.57% greater than last year's extension. And again, we expect something around 2.5%. So, again, this is for our presentation this evening. We'll have discussion at the next board meeting. And we'll be publishing it in our local newspaper on November 28th. We are establishing a public hearing for the proposed property tax increase at December 9th, where we'll have a public meeting. And the tax increase or the levy information will be on display here at the office of CSO, should anyone have any questions. And then I may typically get calls at any time, too, explaining my calculations and recommendations to any public member that cares to contact. Mm-hmm. So, that's it for this evening.
Any questions for Bob?
Back to the chart of asking and getting. So is your take is we'll get the 2.43?
Approximately 2.43.
And we're asking 5, so I...
4.57.
Right. So I go back to sort of what we were trying to do back in when we were asking for 20, you got 9. It's almost like we're asking for double again. I know there's a factor of conservatism in there, but I feel we're sort of back to what we tried to get away from a while ago, was asking for twice what we thought we would need. So is there something driving that that's different? I know the numbers are a lot smaller, but is there something driving that?
Well, what's driving it are the unknowns. We don't know where EAV is going to ultimately end up. We don't know where new construction is ultimately going to end up. Again, the assessor will review these numbers, and he will give me what the tax rates are going to be, and the ultimate extension is going to be in March.
So is there more uncertainty for you this time around than there was in the other times we were asking for closer to what we thought we would get?
Well, it's still around a 2% difference between what we're requesting and what we actually expect to receive. Certainly something much less than a request of 29% greater than last year and getting a 9 or 10%. So you may view it as being double, but the numbers between the request, the percentage increase between the request and the actual estimated extension are significantly less than what historically has been asked for back 10 years ago.
John, the other chart that Bob sent to us that had the general budget plan that showed current and then 2014-15, 2015-16, I think shows some of what you were asking about, which is how close the request is between expenses and revenue to show a projected surplus of $36,000 for 2014-15 and $1,017 surplus under 2015-16. So this, I think, is more relevant in terms of looking at the numbers because it shows us where we end up in terms of surplus with what the levy potentially will be. So
and those budget presentation has the negotiated agreements that are currently in place.
Correct.
And it also includes a $700,000 increase in soft costs for the proposed elementary school recommendations. So there's some money built in there to protect us as we move forward into the next budgeting cycle.
Yeah, I've just never liked the idea of asking. I mean, I understand it's 2%, but it's almost 100% more than what we think we'll get. So I guess it depends how you look at it.
And I try to keep that number as tight as I possibly can.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you.
Anything else for Bob?
Just a plain comment on this. This is still being flushed out in finance. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Moving on. Action items. The consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Okay. Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the reports and recommendations contained in the consent agenda, which include the Human Resources Personnel Report, including employment recommendations. There's a white sheet that is in front of us tonight. Other matters, the approval of board meeting minutes, the October 28, 2013 regular meeting minutes, the October 28, 2013 regular meeting closed session minutes, the November 6, 2013 special meeting minutes, and the November 6, 2013 special meeting closed session minutes. May I have a motion?
Motion. Second.
Motion by Mr. Ellis, second by Mr. Elger. Roll call, please.
Mr. Kenworth?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr.
Kaczynski? Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Yes. Superintendent's recommendations. Truth and Taxation Act Resolution. The administration is recommending that the board approve the Truth and Taxation Act Resolution on the 2013 proposed property tax levy and authorize and direct the Secretary of the Board of Education to publish or cause to be published notice of the public hearing in accordance with the Truth in Taxation Act. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mrs. Nelson, second by Mr. Ellis. Any discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Kaczynski?
Yes.
Mr. Kenworth?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Establish a date and time for truth and taxation hearing. The administration is recommending that the December 9, 2013, 7:15 p.m. be established as the date and time for the truth and taxation hearing on the 2013 proposed property tax levy. The hearing will be held at the Central Services Office, 793 North Main Street, Glen Ellyn, Illinois, 60137. We have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented.
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Pachinski. Although it was a tie. Second by Mr. Elger. Any discussion on this? Roll call, please.
Mr. Elger.
Yes.
Mr. Pachinski.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenworth?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. 2014 Elementary School Facility Planning. July 17th, 2013, the board has been discussing a proposal to add four classrooms to each elementary school, along with some related improvements. This work is depicted by the schematics and the supporting documentation the board reviewed at its October 28, 2013 meeting. The administration is recommending that the board approve going out for bid on that work. This action would approve the bid process for the work at Benjamin Franklin and Abraham Lincoln Schools anticipated for the summer of 2014. This action would also approve the future bid process for the work at Churchill and Forest Glen Schools anticipated for the summer of 2015. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Escalante, second by Mrs. Nelson. Discussion.
Man, I still have concerns over this plan, you guys, as I said in the last meeting. At this point, I think we're going to bid where we're just putting out to get people to come back and give us actual costs, right?
Mm-hmm. It's just the bid process.
Yeah, so we're not committing to the funding of this at this point. It's just the bids, and I don't want to slow the process down, but I still probably struggle with moving forward with this as just an individual board member after the bids, and it's still, you know, I appreciate I spent some time with a few of you talking to you about this, and I still struggle with a couple of the assumptions. I guess in the recommendation, we as a board have decided that Spalding is where we would build a new school. And I assume everyone's on board with that. I don't know that I've heard that everybody is. I know at least someone is, but the plan includes a building at Spalding. And I guess, is everybody on board with that?
Well, that's the land we own.
Huh?
That's the land we own.
Right, John, I don't think it's a specific plan to build at Spalding. I think it's
what the recommendation does say. It says that the, at least the way I interpret it, says that we would build a new building at Spalding.
Yeah,
I didn't know we had agreed to that, but
I think
it's a recommendation.
The recommendation by the administration isn't something that we have agreed to, I don't believe.
You have not.
But I think what in our last facilities workshop, I think we came to the agreement, I think, mm-hmm. that we were looking to build another middle school as the second phase to this plan as well.
So middle school, not K-5?
Excuse me, the second elementary school.
Okay.
Thank you for correcting me. I don't know if we have finalized those plans. I'm pretty sure we have not. I know there's still discussion about a charter school, a magnet school, or a traditional school.
Okay. Well, and then, so, I read this as the recommendation was following, and I needed to get out whether everyone, if anybody was for or against that. And I still struggle, as you know, I've explained to a couple people that, and maybe the architects can answer this, but I'm worried that we're in a situation where we're dependent on a phase two of our plan, which is a referendum. And if that referendum does not pass, then we're saying, okay, we got to right size. So the referendum that we have at the board, the strategy of the board, I think, is referendum for a new school. That referendum fails, if it does. Then we have to go back and say, okay, referendum to fix the four buildings, to eliminate the rest of the portables, and fix the infrastructure. And, you know, I'm not sure if our, you know, I still have concerns that the plan we put forward, the architects didn't necessarily say, okay, let's make sure that if we come back to the four buildings because a referendum for a new building fails, that whatever we're doing now is something that we can leverage and won't impact our ability to retrofit the schools to be for 650 and to put in the right infrastructure and bathrooms and gyms and all that stuff. So, you know, without taking away more green space, right? And the other thought is, if the referendum does fail and we do not we have to go back to the four schools, based on our goal here that's in this recommendation, we're going to full-day kindergarten, which means I feel like I got to put now another two classrooms in every building. So I take my Ben Franklin example. I'm taking four classrooms. I'm taking the four portables. I'm building four classrooms. Now I got to put all day kindergarten on that.
We've not agreed to any of that.
I didn't say we agreed to it. You're creating a domino effect.
We're not there yet.
I know we're not there yet, but we've all. But it for me, it's always about curriculum first. So we have said, and if these facts are wrong, please correct me. We have said half day kindergarten is not the best way for our kids to go through our school system, mm-hmm. given the new core standards and given the amount of time that we have. So we, as an education body, from a curriculum perspective, would like to be able to offer full-day kindergarten, to be able to provide the education the kids need and the ability for them to stay up with the Common Core. Is that a correct statement, or is that completely wrong?
That's what we've discussed.
Right.
That's a feeling. Those are feelings and discussions and wants that should circle the conversation of phase two, and if it fails, then but I'm not holding any decisions on wants and feels and might be's to phase two because we haven't gotten to that point yet.
But so
the community hasn't even voted it up or down yet.
Right. But I don't know that it's a want or a feel.
I think it is. It is, because right now.
Well, that's not what I've heard academically.
But it's we're doing it today with a half day kindergarten. Is it optimal? I'm not a psychologist or an educator to say that, but we're doing it today. So, and it's not a requirement to have full day kindergarten.
No, there's certainly a lot of momentum behind it, and I could see us. You know, I could see the situation with full-day kindergarten and we go and put two portables on Franklin because we need two more classrooms for kindergarten, for full-day.
Yeah, but if the community doesn't support that, then we're not going to do it. We've got to think of another way to do it or not do it.
Mm-hmm. So, John, is your concern that by going forward to start to go out to bid for this phase one, that you feel we're hampering ourselves for phase two? You know, we could be?
Well, there's a little bit of that, right? I mean, for me, you know, and I'm just being completely transparent here, right? For me, passing a referendum in this community requires something that a certain percentage of the community will support. And I think a certain percentage of the community would support getting rid of the portables. I do. So we have a plan here where we're going to spend this money to get rid of 16 portables, and we're going to have six left in the K through 5. Then we're going to go to the community and say, hey, as a recommendation states, we want to build a new building. And they're going to look at us and go, well, you got six portable classrooms and you want a new building. That those six classrooms only take 100 to 120 kids. What are you going to do with the other?
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, I just think it'd be, I think it's harder to get the community behind something.
I understand that, and there might be a different point of view. A point of view that I have for this is we put our first portable in 2001, is that right? Right around there?
Roughly.
2001. Yep. And since that time, I believe from 2001 to 2013 now, we have either added portables or kept them the same number. But during that time, have we ever decreased the number of portables we have?
No.
So every board for the last 12 years has been looking at this problem to try to decide, okay, how are we going to solve it? And when is the enrollment going to stop? And what's the optimal solution? And I think what the board is trying to do now is say, there's an ideal solution maybe and an optimal solution maybe, but maybe what we could do first is take a step of something we can do. And if we really do want to get rid of some of the portables, this first step is to say, let's start getting rid of some of the portables. I think we make a mistake when we say that the community is 100% behind it, or that a community will be behind a referendum on the basis of just getting rid of portables, because certainly no one's been knocking down the door for the last 12 years to say get rid of these portables. The only ones who have been saying that are the people in the district, which makes
the likelihood of passing a referendum even that much harder.
If you're going to base the referendum on getting rid of portables.
Well, and when I say get rid of portables, yes, getting rid of portables, 21st century, and you know, I mean, it's everything that we want to do. Right?
Those are things we still want to do, but right now what we're saying is rather than wait and wait till we have a perfect plan that we can somehow sell to the community, we would like to take a step now to get something done that's tangible and start to make these improvements. Things could happen in the next 2-3 years before we ever even get to a phase two discussion that could change our mind on what that plan is.
So I completely buy into the fact that there's some value to getting rid of some portables and putting them into buildings. I completely agree with that, right? I have no problem with that. I will vote yes for the bids, okay? But just so we can understand the cost, because that's something that, you know, we need to understand anyway. But I do struggle with the end recommendation at this point, you know, in terms of, and this is where I'm going to have to work with the architects and the recommendations to understand, are we doing something that if 2 or 3 years from now we find out nobody's going to support a new school, and we have to go back to the schools, and we get mandated kindergarten, the last thing I want to do is add two more portables onto Franklin because of that.
Well, John, I mean, that's a question that could be answered, I think. Mr. Richardson is here tonight, and he could probably lend some knowledge to that if you want to ask him the question.
Yep. So my question is, the way I see our plan, it doesn't really address infrastructure that much. In some cases, it does a little bit. And I don't know if it was done with the mindset that if we have full-day kindergarten and we need to go back to the four buildings because there isn't a new school, is there anything we did that didn't make sense because maybe we should have gone up two stories knowing that we were going to be stuck in the four buildings? Or, you know, my just example of Franklin is I worry that we're wrapping that gym and then all of a sudden we're a 650-size school and we've got now, you know, all-day kindergarten and all that stuff becomes too small. You know, would there have been an option to say take the gym, put a second floor on it, use that as classroom so that if we ever have to do something later, we can go out behind there and lock it in. I don't know. I'm not an architect. But, you know, was that the mindset of if we have to go back to those four buildings, would we be able to fix those things?
The only thing I can tell you is that, you know, we need to gather a lot of specific data, like you said, about full-day kindergarten and special education and all those other pieces that have a real impact on those buildings. if you know where we left off with the last master planning effort, you know, site by site, you know, Churchill is designed to receive future expansion. You know, we are making provisions for that.
To go up or out?
It would be over horizontal. It would be out. It would be taking more property. You know, the other sites, when we were looking at 600 student sites, we were taking down part of the building because you made a key comment there that might have gone by a lot of people that you right. said maximize green space. I mean, I think you said that, right?
And that's really the impetus for my thinking, right, is that several years ago when we talked about this, right, we said, hey, if we were going to right-size this building for what it was, I mean, even at Franklin, I think we were knocking down that south wing that was built and building a new two-story one, right? And it was a different approach.
Well, picking up where you left off, it was actually the north side of the building. Was actually
Oh, yeah, you're right, north, yeah.
So what we're doing there would preclude something happening at the gym, but that was being done for food service purposes.
That was being done what?
For food service purposes. We were trying to get more storage and move and upgrade serving at that particular site. So, you know, again, there were a lot of things going into that design right. process. And so, you know, Franklin in particular, we were looking at replacing that north wing. So the addition you're putting on now wouldn't have an impact. In fact, we were making provisions to add on that location, too. So that would kind of plug into a future right-sizing, but the site itself just doesn't support 600, but that's a whole other story, you know, in terms of certain...
Yeah, but that may be our only option.
You're right. But yes, so, and then at Forest Glen, it was a two-story solution at the far west end of the building.
Right.
And we would have to take down portions so we could rethink that in order to accommodate future replacement. But bear in mind, too, that we're designing all the stormwater to receive these four classrooms. At Churchill, we're going to design the manifolds on the stormwater system to receive future capacity. But if that's a desire of the district, then we, you know, we may need to take a look at that.
And it's, you know, I mean, I think it's pretty clear. It's not a desire of the board.
Right.
You know,
right.
I think the board, you know, but from my perspective, you know, I just, if we're going to end up 3 years from now in a position where we've got four buildings and we just got to right size them, we just, you know, I'd hate to go back and have to redo the stormwater. You know, and again, I don't know if doing that means, okay, it's just another 50K. Or if we do it right now, we save 250K, right? But I just have this fear of we're going to add two portables at Lincoln and, or sorry, at Forest Glen and Franklin because we're going to go all day kindergarten. And,
can I ask a question, Ron? Because we had this discussion at the last board meeting. Mm-hmm. You talked about Churchill and having it, you know, ready for additional space potentially.
We have it ready for four more classrooms. I believe that was the case.
We have to have that discussion. You know, what would you want? You know, we were designing it for 600 in general terms. You know, does that mean take down the diamond or, you know, everything depends on what we take away.
And that's the thing, is we're at 650 now or something?
Churchill this month is at 663.
Right. So, you know, part of this conversation, so, you know, you make decisions and at the same time you continue to plan. I mean, that's what I hear you saying. And I take a different view of the board deciding to move forward with bids and then potentially doing this work, in that what I think it says to the community, and I got three phone calls this past weekend, and an email from three former D41 parents, kids are now at Western or graduated, and one with a child in eighth grade, saying, do something. Thank you for moving something forward, not me, the board, mm-hmm. that this is the time. We've been talking about this, and it shows diligence that the board is willing to take some steps and self-fund and be creative about how to do this, at least now, to send a message to the community that the board is wanting to take care of its current students, but also be thinking about the future. So I don't know if any of those people are in the community in the room right now, but
and I'm not against that at all.
Right.
I think that is the right thing to do. I just want to make sure that we're not putting ourselves in a situation.
And John, everything you're talking about are things that we have been directing Ron and the architects to be doing all along.
He hadn't looked at it.
Because he's not been directed to look and do those pieces. But the conversation has been, at least as I've been a part of it, that we have to be looking and seeing what the properties could bear. And there are some properties that can't bear more than what we're having you do.
Right.
So part of that, then, last comment, is that it's taking this and then moving it to the community, having that conversation. Because if there's a groundswell of support for a full-day kindergarten, that means X and what those dollars are and resources are. And it means building. And if all we own right now is Spalding, which is what we have, outside of that little space by Main Street School, that's a detention pond, then we have to be creative going back and looking at that. So it's an iterative conversation. And I think what we're trying to do is show and recognize the weight that parents have had for years and trying to move forward and be as connected as we can to the larger conversation.
And I think the only restrictions that I've been hearing on the construction side is outside of the retention pond, which water buckets or whatever, is building higher, which is we're building ceilings that you can't build higher. But that's keeping the conversation in a physical sense. I mean, we also have we got to move this thing forward. And the next conversation is okay, green space or more one-story buildings, or redistricting the schools, because we can do a two-story on Churchill now and add more students there, and or we got. You know, Ben Franklin has all that land. Okay, let's build it out that way and redistrict the Glen Ellen B-41 sites. We got to do something now to solve what we can, and then present the opportunities and the conversations in next year or a year and a half to say, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to build a large enough school to bring, like I think we've, Joe and at the finance committee, we're going to bring a large enough school to house some of our students that we're sending elsewhere.
Chase,
I hate to always bring it this way, but turn it into a revenue center. You know, we start bringing some of those kids in, and then we got more funding that way. So, to me, it's taking a step that we can take, taking a small step, and then see what our options are in a year. And this is how we present it to the community. Because we still have communication things that we're going to talk about. We're going to do a referendum on a new school, and we're not. I'm just saying hypothetically. New school at Spalding that's going to house all our special education kids and bring it in, turn it into a revenue center. And then that's going to, and then we're also going to redistrict something. But the conversation has moved from pressure release to then we're into long-term decision-making.
Any other comments?
Now, I guess I would just say that in the spirit of making our plan more complete, you know, we should parallel paths starting to talk about phase two as a board.
Totally agree.
That's what we said last week, too.
Because,
I agree.
You know, before we start making a decision on actually putting a brick up and realizing that our so that's something that needs to be done.
But we're still not going to know if a referendum will pass this year. So a decision has to be made to do something. This is phase one is what we're looking at. And at the same time, having a parallel conversation around what are those options for the other pieces.
In that
and knowing phase two, the architects might be able to look at it and say, yeah, we're good. And they might say, here's a few changes we make. And we have time to make those changes, especially at Churchill and Forest Glen. If we need to.
Joe.
Yeah, well, the key thing is the conversation we're going to have about phase two has to get the community involved. We have to. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to, as Erica said, we're not going to get to a resolution if it's on Spalding, if it's on a new site, if it's at a K-5 or some other option that's out there, including full-day kindergarten. And that's a discussion we have to have on an ongoing basis. We have to get the community involved because ultimately the funding for it involves the community. So to do that in 6 or 8 or 10 weeks is just not going to happen. And for me, this first step is a critical step to taking care of a problem that Dina said has been around for 12 years. and counting. So to me, that's key. And I think I read the recommendation, and Paul and Bob know this. I always come back with the same statement every time I read it about one item, which is Lincoln's larger detention item. I don't think that should be tied into the phase two.
You don't think what should be tied?
The Lincoln larger detention area needs to be taken care of sooner than later. Mm-hmm. A parking lot there needs to be taken care of sooner or later. And that's mixed into the phase two. My hope is it happens sooner, and I'm going to keep pushing that.
Joe, I think that Mr. Cicerelli addressed that question, right? It's not actually...
I was just pointing to John. Like, there's things in phase two that we're still working through, and I understand. I just bring it up.
So. Paul, what is your take on full-day kindergarten in this district outside? I mean...
In the larger context of full-day K? Is that what the question...
Yeah, I mean, in the larger context of, you know, I've heard that, you know... I mean, it may be mandated, it may not.
Yeah.
Right? So we don't have to... I mean, unless you're sitting here going, you know, the people I talk to says it'll be mandated, but, you know, is it necessary for us to... I mean, we're already talking about taking art and music away from kindergartners, right? So to allow more time for the core. So, you know, is your take for us to successfully be able to implement the core and provide the education that we should go to full-day kindergarten, or do you think that is not a something that we need to do?
Two pieces there. One, I think it will be very difficult for the state to mandate it because there is huge financial cost behind that. But that hasn't stopped
the state
Illinois or any other state from passing on unfunded mandates. But as I sit here today, I would struggle seeing them being able to do that, especially in our rural communities. And Illinois has so many rural school districts, it would crush those districts literally. From my perspective, when I look at some of our achievement numbers, I have some questions. If you're a student of minority descent, if you're a student of poverty in our district, we need to start giving you more opportunities to be successful. And I think we need to start earlier. It is critical. When you read the research around students of affluence versus a student of poverty, could have heard up to 5 million more words by the time they are in second grade. That's astonishing. When you understand the importance of vocabulary to children, that we have to give them more opportunities with vocabulary and more opportunities to hear those conversations. I believe in full-day kindergarten. I believe in full-day kindergarten. I also believe in preschool. I think we've got to get younger, our 3- and 4-year-olds. We've got to be looking at those. And that is in a global sense. Do I believe it? Absolutely. I absolutely believe that 2.5 hours a day, for us to say that's half-day kindergarten, I think we're fooling ourselves. I think really when you pull out the time for the arts, which I believe are very important, and other time you're down to 2 hours a day. And if I'm a student who's behind, and when we look at our numbers and we have 22% poverty rate in our district, so you're thinking about those kids' lives. We can change their lives. There is nothing like generational poverty. The thing that changes generational poverty is education. It's been proven time and time again. What they need is a better chance early on. When a kid is reading on grade level, by first and third grade, you have greater chance. It's astronomical the comparative. If you're not by first grade, flip of a coin. By third grade, there's a greater chance you're going to drop out of school than stay in school. So do I believe in it? Yes. Do I believe in high quality instruction for every kid every day? 100%. And I think it starts early. I do. But do I believe it's going to be state mandated or federally mandated? I don't think so. I don't believe so. So we've got to be able to solve the problem for ourselves and look at solutions. I think that's one of the pieces that the recommendation is to looking at full-day kindergarten. I think the other area that we've got to look at, have a hard look at, is our ELL and special education. We've got to look at those areas and take a hard look into ensuring what are we doing for all students. All students means all students in our view of how we're doing this work.
Yeah, so
but
guys,
thanks for the question.
Yeah. So, guys, I can understand the need to want to do something. I'm the one who's always saying that, so I get it. And I'm very happy to get rid of the board. The plan has to be one that doesn't put us in a situation where we're putting two portables back on property because of what we need to do from a curriculum perspective, which is always my number one priority.
But John, we're never going to, as we sit here today, we don't know that. We don't know if it's going to be mandated. And even if it isn't mandated, we don't know if we have the space. And we right now,
well, we know we don't have the space.
Right now, it's fair to say we don't have the space.
Yeah, we know
to
we
do
don't.
All day, don't have the space, don't have the money. And if we're going to do all-day kindergarten, then we have to have a rate, operating rate increase as well.
It all
so that's a referendum as well.
It all goes back to a referendum or whether we're stuck with these four buildings.
That's right. So what we can do now is eliminate, what, two-thirds, three-quarters of the existing portables we have now with money that we have.
And you still need those classrooms
and still have
to be able to add on. I mean, even if you're doing a new elementary, you need those classroom space to be able to add on the full day K, because full day K is adding two additional teachers at each building. So you've got to have that space. That is not just a nice thing to have in the short term. It is it's thoughtful from a long term perspective of having a new elementary, but you need those additional classroom space for the kinder, you know, if you choose to go down that road. Again, that is a recommendation from the superintendent. That has a lot of work to be filtered through.
I mean, some of these guys have heard my math, right? So I still don't fully appreciate that a new building we would be able to fill. I still think we have a good 10 classrooms open, which could be classrooms where we bring more special ed in, we do preschool in, but, you know, those are sort of build it and they will come type of ideas, you know, maybe revenue generating. So, anyway, I just want to make sure you guys understand where I'm coming from. I got, you know, I'm not against getting rid of the portables, but, you know, if I had $15 million and I could provide all-day kindergarten and that was the better thing to do from a curriculum perspective, that's just always been my priority. So,
any other comments?
I just want to clarify something for the record. John made a statement that sounded declarative to me, and there's conversation around what to do with time. Certainly art and music are a part of that, but there's no direction to take art and music out of the curriculum. So I just want to
clarify
that for
the record. There's no what?
There's no directive to take art and music out of the curriculum.
No, correct. It's just something that's being discussed.
That's right. I just want to clarify that for the record.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we've had some comment about that from the public, so I want to make sure that we're clear about that.
It was a recommendation that came from Think Tank that was full day kindergarten as well as so
one
those are
pieces. Yeah.
Yeah, it's to, thank you for making that point. That it's just a recommendation at this point. Anything else?
Thank you for listening.
I don't think we disagree with you, Joe. We hear what you're saying. I think we're all on the same page. You know, we have lots of work to do and continued conversation. I want to make a recommendation as a final point to Paul, and I already talked to him about this, is to see if we can set up a separate meeting to be talking about as we move, once we take the vote and if we move to bids, to have a separate meeting to talk about and start to really, like we did in July, the summer, talk more granularly around it. And John, you know, let's work it around your schedule so you can be there.
Yeah, I'm good with going out to bid, but okay. I'm still not fully on board with where we're at.
Okay, anything else? Roll call, Mrs. Stepper.
Mr.
Bochanski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenworth?
Yes.
Mr.
Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr.
Black?
Yes.
Superintendent's report.
Two pieces. You have the student enrollment numbers up there. I'm going to be very brief tonight. They are stable. Any questions around those numbers? They have not significantly changed since my last report 2 weeks ago.
Paul, the only thing that I would
please.
Request is, and we keep talking about right-sizing schools and this and mm-hmm. that, and could you include the right size for the schools as they are today?
So we give you the actual the numbers that are in each one of the schools.
Right. So Ben Franklin right now has 581 students. What is the right-sized amount of students that should be in that classroom or in that school? I mean, I'd like to
what
see.
What was
that.
The school built for?
Exactly.
Okay.
With or without the
affordables? Yeah, with or without the affordables.
Both.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions on the student enrollment numbers? All right, my second one is around something that maybe a few people have heard about, bed bugs, and not around the issue itself. I just want to thank especially the Hadley staff, their professionalism, the way they handled this, absolutely incredible. From the principal to our custodians, to our teachers, to the entire staff, to our students and our parents, thank you. Thank you for hanging tough with us. It was a challenging week. But I was so impressed with Bob's team, his custodial staff. They were in there yesterday afternoon, yesterday morning through the afternoon, ensuring the building was ready for our students and staff. They worked from 7 a.m. to roughly 3:30.
Saturday and Sunday,
ensuring that our building was ready to go. From my team, thank you for your countless hours from Friday until 10-ish, 11-ish, to all day Saturday, all day Sunday the previous week, this past weekend, each of the nights. And it truly was a team effort from the board, giving me the emergency approval to move forward, to our team, to our staffs, teachers, our parents. Parents were incredible. They understood the struggles that we were going through. Were a few frustrated? Absolutely. Absolutely, and I understood that. But I really appreciate the community helping us out, getting us through this. People really do make a difference, and it mattered. And it mattered in this instance. So just huge community thanks. It was an interesting week, I got to tell you that one. That one there was no superintendent class for. It was odd, to say the least. When I decided on Tuesday morning at 6:30 that I was going to have my second cup of coffee, usually my second cup is in my car driving to work, I decided, you know what, this one morning I'm going to have my second cup here at the counter, reading the paper. And Bob calls around 6:40 and says, "You have WGN News sitting outside of Hadley." That was a quick decision to say, "All right, we're going to go have coffee with WGN and Tanya." Yeah. But more importantly, to our incredible staff and parents and students, thank you. Thank you for everything you've done this past week.
Paul, did we get the guarantee or whatever, the one-year guarantee or the...
We went with a different company.
Oh, okay.
It just a lot of due diligence, a lot of conversations led us to Orkin.
Yeah.
And we feel very confident with the plan we have in place, long term and short term. Feel very, very confident with these individuals.
Oh, I thought that was kind of a standard policy.
Thank you.
But what one thing, Paul, obviously you and your staff's communication was outstanding, not only to the board but to the community. But I'd like to point out, maybe you could summarize it for us, the latest in that we've not only checked Hadley, but we've done other proactive things as well.
Yes, we've looked into all the elementaries. Bob was here yesterday with the team all day as well. We went from elementary to elementary to the CSO. With a visual inspection and a canine inspection of all our buildings, and it was found to be bed bug free, which was important. But we're going to have an ongoing, like we said earlier, ongoing relationship with Orkin to be checking these pieces, to ensuring that we're always on top of it. As we've learned, I'm no bed bug expert, But I am, I know more today than I did last Thursday around 2:30 in the afternoon. One of the things we do know is that these can come in at any time. They're hijack, they get on with people and they drop off, or they get into boxes. And one of the pieces that I told the media, at Hadley alone, you have roughly over 1,600 people coming and going on any given day. That's not including the boxes that are delivered. They love cardboard. So you think about that. There's a great opportunity for any hitchhiking to go on to drop off into one of our buildings. So it's just an ongoing effort. There's never going to be a one-shot, all bed bugs are done, all creatures are done. It is part of our life here in this environment.
I know Patrick and I traveled last week. I always check the mattress every hotel. I don't care how nice or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's just a fact of life.
I heard that a lot. Yeah. I heard that a lot from parents. I was at Hadley's parent-teacher conferences both days, trying to really interact with the parents, and that's what they were saying. Those who travel, they're like, you know what? It's happened to each and every one of us. It doesn't matter what hotel you're in. It can be the Sheraton. It can be whatever. And you have to check. So,
Sam, if you wouldn't mind, without giving a name here, Dr. Gordon sent to the board an example of some of the feedback. And I think in tying in with the communication piece on this, which is important, I just want to read for the record what this parent sent. Dr. Gordon, as a parent of a student at Hadley, I truly appreciate the thorough and painstaking manner in which this entire situation has been handled. Most effective, the communication has been absolutely top-notch. I run a client services business, and I am sharing the way this was communicated with my team as an example of how to get out ahead of a problem, own it, and control as much of the message as possible. You have my complete support as well as my respect for a job well done, kind regards. So I just want to read that into the record and as an example of what I think we've closed up today.
I've got to tell you, I've got an incredible team. Mm-hmm. It truly is an incredible team. I'm blessed. I know there's at times the communication director position gets pointed out. Julie Worthen is an absolute rock star. I could not have done this without her. She, and I know I can see her back there right now, she's like, oh, this is the worst thing in the whole world. She is worth her weight in gold. Mm-hmm. She is incredible. She's thoughtful. She's right there. She was alongside me for every one of our school visits. She was also the one picking up the rugs. She was looking. She was helping. She was there to understand the situation. It's important to be there. When you're communicating a story, it's important that it's firsthand information. I couldn't be more blessed to have the cabinet that I have around me. And Julie, in this instance, was that shining star. But each time, the cabinet blows me away, along with all of our other staff members in this district. It truly is a privilege to serve as the superintendent of this district.
And not to keep belaboring this point, but just a quick word on the buses.
Buses were all sprayed at district cost. I'm a little disappointed with Illinois Central, put that on record. But we felt like it was really important that we took care of this, that we sent how many?
Two technicians.
How many buses?
35. They spent all Saturday.
So those are our buses?
They're not our buses, but they run our routes.
They're dedicated to us.
They're dedicated to us, and I'm hopeful for more of a partnership. I was quickly told, no, there will not be a partnership in that. But we felt like it was the right thing to do for our students and other students who may end up riding that. So Bob took that initiative. Well, that man just kept working. He never stopped. these last days, it's just incredible. So.
Yeah, I'll just add another piece to it. I appreciated that we were given a price and it was negotiated. So mm-hmm. That was quite a savings. So.
We try.
It was substantial.
It was. Thank you. Good work all the way around.
Anything else, Paul?
That is it.
I think he said more about his cabinet than he did us and his on board.
I would expect him to. Okay, board reports. Any board committee reports?
Dean, you want to talk about the dinner?
Yeah, we could do that. We attended the Illinois Association of School Boards DuPage Division Spring Dinner Meeting. And what that was is there were 34 of the 42 boards in the DuPage area represented, and I think they said there were around 190 board members that showed up for it. And what we did do is we toured the W.A. Johnson School in Bensonville, and they have gone through with some of the ideas of 21st century learning and some of the different spaces that they were developing where you could use the flexible space. And we got to see some of these concepts, and it was quite eye-opening. So it kind of reaffirms where we're going with the plans and the direction we've been given. That was excellent. In addition to that, the speaker was great. They had a speaker there. So you know, sometimes people ask when you go to these, you know, you hear from the community sometimes that you go to these things for the dinner. The dinner was served in the cafeteria of the school, so this wasn't at the Four Seasons, and it was great. It was great, and the conversation that the speaker dealt with is what's going on with communication and how that's changing, you know, and the idea actually was learning to speak native, how education's being transformed in 140 characters or less. So it was eye-opening, gave us, I think, some really good ideas.
I took a ton of notes. His name is Steve Denbo, and he actually works for Discovery Education Network. He's their director of social media strategy. And it'd be hard to encapsulate it, but I think, you know, Dee and I want to have, I know we're going to have a communication workshop as well. So I want to bring this forward and talk a little bit about how he kind of framed the idea of using social media, but then also the, you know, just the shift in terms of how students are, you know, I know we've heard this probably in our own work, but just being rewired in terms of how they're learning. So it's very, really interesting conversation. He was a great presenter, but also lots of good takeaways for, I know what we want to be talking about as a board for communication too. I want to give Sam his pin.
I was going to say, I want to go into that too.
He achieved level one board master certification, so congratulations.
So for people to know what that means that he's amassed at least 60 credits in continuing education, different things that he's had to go to and be part of with the IASB. And it's a big investment of time. Mm-hmm. And he's done that, and Erica's downplaying this a little bit, but she has maintained her status by doing at least 50 additional credits each year. So this is a lot of extra work that these guys do to go learn this stuff, stay up on what's the new learning, and stay current, and we all benefit from that on this board. So thank you.
And I just want to mention, Dean, as well, there's a series of workshops at the conference and that are called Leadershop, and he received his certification for that. So congratulations.
And another extravagant
pen.
Extravagant. I'm going to use it next to
you. Yeah, please use it next to your certificate.
Yeah, certificate. The pen. Yeah.
Same cost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Hey, Dean, on that flexible space, what did you see besides a wall?
So they took, they didn't do it with a wall. They took two classrooms and they put them next to each other, and then they had an adjoining area between the two classrooms that could be, this is some of the information.
Yeah,
actually, this is it, and we can pass this around out
it's
there.
It's the shared space.
It's a shared space, so they use it, like if you have to stop during the day
yeah.
and maybe you have a little learning you have to do with just a few students, you can go in there, or you can open it up and you can use both rooms at the same time. It's a lot of things that you've been educating us on over the years, and it was great to walk through and be in it and see the difference that it makes. And it.
So what were you calling these? Remember the last meeting?
Integrated resources.
So that's
the same concept.
Integrated resources.
Yeah. That was the thing.
Those look very similar to what our current proposals are.
And what's interesting about W.A. Johnson is that they wrapped a new portion around the existing school. And
yes.
I didn't go see the old portion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting. I also had a chance to talk to a second grade teacher. So board members and representatives from their architectural firm did tours, which they have not ever, I think, done before at a dinner meeting. Ron was there as well. So that was helpful because they gave us a picture of what the school looked like, their conceptual, and then how it broke up. And then there was a second grade teacher in her room. Her light was on, and she was welcoming people in to come and see the room. And the room was essentially kind of a hybrid of some of the 21st century space usage in terms of of classroom fixtures, traditional desks still, but grouped like we're using ours, a little less flexibility because they had the traditional desks in them. But the thing that was interesting in terms of what we talked about is I had asked her how long she'd been in the district. She said 5 years. And the thing that she then launched into was this conversation around really being up to speed on aligning program to facility and the Common Core piece that Bensonville, like our district and others, there were two, but not all of them, got ahead of the targets and Common Core requirements. And so she was talking about just feeling much more confident with her second grade class this year and seeing the fruits of being ahead of the curve. So it just reinforced for me in talking with a teacher, boots on the ground, that what we're doing and some of the curriculum work we're doing also now is keeping us a little bit ahead. So it was interesting. It was a good meeting.
Sorry I couldn't be there.
Yeah, well,
I planned on 10, but I was otherwise engaged. All right, any other committee reports? Finance.
Earlier in the Finance Committee, we talked about levy. I think we saw the whole board that saw that presentation. We talked about the truth and taxation hearing, and there was a discussion about electric services.
Thank you, Drew. Any other committee reports? Any other reports? Okay, discussion items. The IASB Resolutions Committee. Mrs. Nelson has provided a summary of recommendations and resolutions that will be heard by the IASB Resolutions Committee this November during the III conference. I'd like to affirm the board's support of Mrs. Nelson's recommendations and her appointment as D41's IASB delegate. Does anybody have any questions as to those recommendations? Any suggestions? Does anybody want to step in for Erica at the III conference to do her work for her?
I'd like to make a motion that we leave Erica do this.
No, I'm happy to do it. Okay. I just want to make one comment on here. I aligned my response based on reading through the report with what the Resolutions Committee has recommended. I did give a little bit of insight on some of these because, for instance, on the charter schools reimbursement one, the very first resolution, there were three other charter schools resolutions that they collapsed. And so while the recommendation was to vote no on this, it collapsed into resolution number 13, which gave a recommend from IASB. So where I had to, where there was a little bit of insight I could give you, I did that. There were a couple, like there are every year, that don't impact District 41. One is the modification for students in high school about PE. And so, I simply align with their choice on that, even though it doesn't affect us. And of course, I said yes to the District 41, District 203 resolution. We'll see what happens. Oh, I do want to mention one thing. At the dinner that we went to, our counterpart in 203 had gotten a note from Representative Mike Conlin, who saw the article about our resolution in the newspaper, cut it out, circled it, and mailed it to her and said, I want to have further conversation about this resolution at the state level. So I think there's some nice groundswell, and there's another resolution that talks about the mandates in here. So I just think it's a good example where boards can, we get frustrated with, what is not happening in the legislature to help us maybe do our job better, and unfunded mandates is a big piece of that. So it was nice to get that feedback from a state rep that he's reading it. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
Any other questions? We good?
Okay. As a former delegate, I know how much time this takes, so I appreciate it. And I'm glad you're doing it, and I'm not.
Thanks to Dan Smith, wherever you are, for building our template.
And Bob Solak. I think Bob may
Bob
have built
it,
and
then,
Dan kind of.
And then Dan fine-tuned it, so we're
it.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Upcoming meetings, November 25, 2013, Board of Education regular meeting, 7:30 p.m. at Central Services. December 9, 2013, public hearing on the tax levy and regular meeting, 7:15 p.m., Central Services office. Other matters. Are there any other matters to be considered this evening? Okay, hearing none. Going back to public participation, is anyone present currently who would like to address the board at this time? Okay, seeing none. Adjourn to closed session. The board has determined it is a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion.
Second. Motion by Mr. Pachinski, second by Mr. Ellis. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Pachinski?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Alford?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. The board will not be taking action when it returns to open session. Return to open session.
Motion.
The time is 8:58.
Wow. Motion.
May I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Kenwood, second by Mr. Ellis. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Meeting adjourned, 8:58. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Lord.